Hey everyone, thanks for listening. I just wanted to jump in right here and let you know that we recorded this episode back in July, over a month ago, actually, over almost 2 months ago. And it's interesting that we're doing our Black Experience in Entertainment Industry episode back to back with the comic book episode, especially with everything that's going on in the world and how we're all looking for a hero. But really, that comes to more light and relevance, these two conversations in tandem with the passing of Chadwick Boseman over the weekend. You know, I have to be completely honest, and I hadn't watched Black Panther until Saturday night of this past weekend, kind of to honor King T'Challa and his memory. And whether you're in mourning or not really a huge fan of the film, or maybe you haven't seen it like I hadn't, it's very clear that Chadwick was a light in the entertainment industry and brought so much peace and joy and happiness to so many people. And he will surely be missed, not just for his performances, but clearly by his friends and family and anybody that knew him. So we're not trying to slight him by not bringing him up or talking more about Black Panther in either of these two episodes. It really has been just, this was when the episode was scheduled to air and we recorded it back on July 11th. But I speak for both Caleb and myself when we say that our thoughts are with Chadwick's family and we hope that he's able to rest in peace. Wakanda forever.
All right, we are officially rolling.
Sweet.
I figured this is where you jump in now because you've been doing that for the past couple episodes.
I'm sorry, but inconsistency is key on my part, so
inconsistency is kind of your MO, honestly. But it's at this point, it's both of us being inconsistent because it's been about a month.
It has.
We sat down.
But we do have a backlog of episodes, so I think it's okay.
We have a backlog of episodes, and when we're recording this, I just released the first one on Thursday, even though I was supposed to release it the Monday before that.
Which is totally fine. Yeah. If you haven't checked that one out, that is our first episode. Obviously, you probably would have checked that one out since this will be like our fifth.
Addressing directly something that happened in our fourth, we were going to challenge each other to watch or intake some sort of art form that highlighted Black artists or Black and Indigenous persons of color art type of artists, and we failed at that. Much like white people do.
We failed. That is very real. We definitely failed at that.
Yeah, we'll get to that, I think.
In my defense, I did have some really, really good conversations with my father, who is now a notorious, infamous libtard because of he's my dad's like he talked to me about like critical race theory, which is something I never thought he would like accept. Which, for those who don't know, critical race theory is the idea that America is a society is built on the idea of white supremacy.
Right.
Which is not something that I like necessarily fully agree with, but I definitely think there's too much of that element in it. But in my defense, I've not engaged in art forms. I have had very, very good conversations. So
I
take that win in my book.
You take that win. You completely ignored the thing that I asked you, but it's totally fine. I'm trying to think if there's anything. I started reading a book called Heavy, and I don't want to get his name wrong because I said it once and then I got it wrong. Allison has listened to him speak and she corrected me. But the book is all about basically how, I mean, it earns its title. I'm only like two chapters in, but it earns its title, and it's about being a Black boy in America. And there's a lot of very autobiographical stuff that's happening in this book to the author, that it's just, it's rough and things that you don't think about existing in any community, but how pertinent things like, I guess how prevalent, not pertinent, how prevalent things like taught degradation of women are in, or things like that, how pertinent that's, and not pertinent, damn it, prevalent that stuff is in inside of Black relations, Black culture, as we've like gone from slavery to now. I need to read more of it before I can say a whole lot about the author's path, but I just know that it's something that I'm glad that I started reading, and but it's also something that I really need to take step by step, because it's just, especially because we're still kind of in this weird pandemic phase. Mm-hmm. But it's good knowledge to have and like really think about, because that's not something I had to deal with growing up. But
oh yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple other ones that I've like actually been, I'm going to at some point. Like I never got around to watching The Watchmen, which HBO made free for that weekend. I didn't get around to watching it. I was really busy that weekend, unfortunately. But I mean that one, like it racial relations.
Right.
I don't know if it's necessarily a forefront, but like it's a pretty big part of it, because like I think the antagonists are like a white supremacist like alt-right group, and then I know they cast Dr. Manhattan with an African American actor, and I think I think the leading actress is also African American, so I think that's actually like an important part of their character too.
Right.
I don't know nearly enough about the show to make any generic statements. I kind of avoided it for the same reason that Alan Moore would have avoided it, because Alan Moore hates any sort of adaptation for his material. But I heard it was good, so I kind of want to check it out.
Yeah, and I heard that they're not doing anything else with it after like
season. Because apparently, like, I think they just. They felt like the story was completed, which I respect a lot. like if you think this, don't milk it out if you don't want to make more of them, you know?
Exactly. I do have to ask you, because we're past the July 3rd, did you get Disney Plus and watch Hamilton?
I did not.
Of course you didn't.
I am still thinking, like, I'm debating whether I actually want to see it on screen. Like, if it was like a Hamilton, like, designed and made for the small screen, I probably would go see it. But like, since it's like the actual musical just recorded, like I'm like debating whether I want to see it or not, you know?
I totally understand, but also I encourage anybody to watch it, not just because I'm a musical person, but like watching it, I was like, oh, there are nuances in the music that I did not understand, and it made me want to see it in person more. Like it really did.
You know, maybe I'll end up watching it. I would say it's more likely that I end up watching it than I don't. Because. Yeah, it makes sense.
Right.
And then I read a comic too, because I think a comic popped up at Reddit that dealt with specifically, which is super interesting. Like it was a Captain America or Falcon comic, or maybe it was like a combined book. It was like a one issue thing that I read. And it was like a super legit one that had to do with like current issues. Cause like the issue was Falcon, who was an African American. Like he was the sidekick or partner of Captain America, goes to stop a robbery from another superhero, a supervillain, and the supervillain was white, and so they arrested Falcon and let the supervillain escape. Oh, and so the issue ends with Captain America like angrily like barging into the police department and like getting Falcon out. But I was like, oh, you know, it's sad as it is, like if superheroes were real, that would probably happen.
Like, probably how that would go down, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, it was super real. Like the fact that it was made like 20, 30 years ago, I was like, oh, okay. That's kind of crazy.
Right.
We're still doing.
Last night, we keep doing free 7-day trials of HBO Max with all of our different like email addresses. And last night we were watching Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And there was a whole episode where Carlton and Will get pulled over. And because they're driving their Uncle Phil's law firm partner's car to like I think Palm Springs for him, and they get lost and they get pulled over driving 2 miles an hour, and Carlton's like, well, you'd pull a car over if they were driving 2 miles an hour, wouldn't you, because they then accuse them of being like car thieves and threw them in jail. And it was this whole thing where I was like, this was made how many years ago, and this is the exact sort of like the sort of thing that we're looking at right now, where it's like,
yeah,
people can't even drive like without being harassed sometimes. But
no, yeah, it's definitely interesting to see how like some like media forms are definitely ahead of the curve on that front.
All that said,
that was you we can dive more, we dove way more into that I think on our last episode or the episode before that.
Yes, previous episode.
Tonight, because I've been pushing for it, we are finally going to be talking about my forte, which is comic books, graphic novels of the type, which has been like a really, really important medium for me, and something that me and Sawyer talked a bit about when we were in high school, and that's kind of like one of the initial ways we bonded.
I was just going to ask you, when did it infiltrate your life? Because for me, it was high school was when I like kind of got into it. Where did this start for you? Like, when did comics start?
I mean, like, You know what? It has my earliest, like, I mean, you always know who Spider-Man is. You always know who, like, Captain America and Batman. Oh, you didn't know. No one knew who Captain America was. Batman, Superman, Spider-Man were the big ones.
Right.
But I think when I really got into it was probably middle school.
Okay.
And I was really bullied. And then I would just read all the time because I just didn't have many friends in middle school.
Right.
And then I got my hands on an X-Men comic book, the Uncanny X-Men, X-Men, the Claremont issues, where, like, he shifted the focus. So, like, when Stan Lee originally made the X-Men, they were supposed to be, like, you know, an allegory for racial issues.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold kind of well for their first run. Eventually it was canceled, and then Claremont came in and revamped them.
Right.
Made them – he diversified them, so there was now an African-American. There was a Japanese X-Men who was Sunfire. They had Storm. A Native American who was – Thunderstrike? Thunder – he died pretty early on. Then his brother took over, and his brother's name was Warpath. I can't remember what the original one was. But, like, you know, that's where you had Wolverine, Colossus, Nightcrawler, like, a lot of the main ones. And while they were a lot more diverse and still dealt with those racial issues, they, like, was a lot more focused on, like, the outcast and, like, kind of teenage rebel angst. So that really applied to me as someone that didn't really get along with people in middle school.
Like, my angst is your angst.
Yeah, so I got, like, I love Nightcrawler. I thought he was a great, awesome character. I loved Colossus. I started getting into comics there and following X-Men. Mm-hmm. Got really into Star Wars comic books at the time, too. So probably actually my first exposure to comics was Star Wars comics.
Okay.
If anyone wants to read a good comic, Tales of the Jedi, it's set way, way in the past. Art from, like, the 80s.
Is it canon now? Or
it is
it...
It's no longer canon. It's like... Which is unfortunate. Which is crazy because, like, it also has, like, a really cool female protagonist, who is the main character, Nomi Sunrider, the original Star Wars badass female hero. no one tell you differently. But, like, that was like, I read those. I don't know. I was real young, probably, like, as young as, like, 5 or 6.
Right.
I had no idea what was going on. I actually recently read those a couple years back. I'm like, oh, the story of that case is really, really good. Now that I know what's going on. So, yeah, actually probably Star Wars comics growing up until I kind of got into more of the superhero phase with X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And then high school, I started following things a lot more. And then probably more recently, I've kind of, like, kept up and, like, I found – like, I've visited local comic book shops and kind of gotten acquainted with a lot of comic books that I've liked reading.
Right.
Yeah, it's, like, it's kind of cool, like, how things have swapped. So, like, I watched, like, the Super Friends show and, like, the Justice League when I was a kid. And, like – one of my favorite characters on the Justice League show was always Flash.
I used to say Flash was my favorite when I got into comics, and everybody hated that I said that.
No, yeah, but here's what was crazy about the Flash, though, which is something I didn't realize till I was, like, probably a couple years back, maybe, like, when I was, like, 18 or 19. The Flash from that show isn't Barry Allen. Like, that, like, it's not – Barry Allen actually, like, is kind of lame in the comics. He's, like, this, like, geeky – CSI lab tech who, like, is kind of awkward with people, not super outgoing. He's still, like, obviously positive and stuff like that.
Right.
But the Flash in that show was actually Wally West, like, his sidekick, the Kid Flash. So, like...
Really?
And then, like, I found, like, I was digging into it, like, oh, why is Wally West the Flash here? What the heck? I thought it was always been Barry Allen. Turns out Wally West was the Flash for, like, from 1985 to, like, 2004. He was the Flash in the Justice League comics and the Flash comics. Like, Barry Allen had, like, died in lore... in that, like, around in 1985.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what the... So, like, literally growing up, all, like, the DC stuff I was absorbing was Wally West, which was, like, such a, like, as I got into comics, like, what? Like, so, like, Flash I actually like is Wally West, not Barry? That's crazy. And, like...
I hate myself for not knowing this, but...
I know, it's, like, now, like, Wally West is, like, my favorite Flash, and Barry's fine. Like, obviously, some people like Barry because, like, nostalgia stuff, but, like,
right.
That was, like, such a mind-blow. So that was, like, a cool part of, like, growing up and, like, learning about those differences.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, yeah, recently, like, you know, I found a comic book shop in Grand Rapids that I visit pretty frequently, and then, like, I kind of frequent the subreddits just because I'm bored. And, like, especially as the Marvel movies started taking off, I started exploring more about kind of the obscure characters.
Right.
Read stuff like Daredevil, read stuff like, well, Daredevil's not obscure, but, and that's how I kind of got into it. And now I'm a certified comic book nerd that trashes the current MCU.
Oh, is this, wait, so... There was at one point somebody, I think it was DC, did the New 52. Was that was the thing that they did? Can I know you have probably a bunch of places you want to go with this, but I just have to get this out before I forget it. First of all, I remember the New 52 revamp and everybody being really pissed off. Secondly, I remember like the current like standing of the MCU, and I know that people are mad about it, but I don't know why. You're fine. The third thing, and this is just an opinion, and maybe we'll get to this way down the road, but like the thing that always intrigues me is I had more interest because I don't really read comics much anymore, and it's not because I don't want to. It's just like I don't have the time and resources right now. Mm-hmm. He says during a pandemic when everything shut down. But like the thing that really just kind of shocks me is I enjoy reading DC stories more. I enjoy reading their like graphic novels more, and their movies blow. And I struggle to get through like Marvel comics. I struggled to connect with many of the characters, and their movies were amazing. Like, that's the one thing that throws me for a loop every time. But anyway, I just need to say all that. You say what you need to say.
Oh yeah, no, I don't think so. When it comes to the movies, I think Wonder Woman was good. I don't think Wonder Woman blew. I think its third act might have kind of didn't really stick the landing super well, but I thought Wonder Woman was good. And then I'm you know, moderately excited for the next Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah, which they pushed back because, you know, everything got pushed back.
In the same way, I'm also moderately excited for Robert Pattinson's Batman, because I think Robert Pattinson is a much better actor than people give him credit for.
I wholeheartedly disagree with you, but that's okay.
Are you kidding? He had that one great movie. What was it called? Where he's got... He plays
Twilight.
One of... No. He was in Twilight, but then he did another movie follow-up. He was one of two brothers, and his brother has some special needs.
Was it like elephants?
I don't know. And then like they like do like a crime spree and eventually get caught at the end of the movie. Like,
I have no idea. You're way more invested in
Robert Pattinson. I'm sorry. I can't remember the name of it, but like I haven't seen the movie either. But apparently it was like really well critically acclaimed. And like,
okay. I'm just tired of Batmans.
Sorry. I mean, I am too. But then like I think Robert Pattinson is one of those actors that probably just – saw Twilight as his opportunity, his foot in the door in the industry, shut up, did his part. You could tell in interviews he hates the movies.
Right.
And like he just did what he had to do, and now he gets to play Batman. So obviously it worked out for him. Right. And I think he's a good enough actor that it could be really well. But I do echo your sentiment that I'm sick of Batman. Batman is one of those weird things, especially in comics nowadays, where like people know it sells because Batman sells. He sells. And like he's so formulaic that no one actually wants to push him. Like there was back in late 2000s, there was a run where Batman dies, and then Robin, so the original Robin become Nightwing, Dick. What's his last
name? Dick Tracy.
Not Dick Tracy. Dick Tracy is a totally different thing. I can't remember what that
is. Is Dick Tracy an actor? I don't know.
Why am I blanking on this? This is so dumb. Either way, Nightwing becomes Batman.
Yeah.
And his Robin is Damian Wayne, so Batman's son.
Okay.
And it was super well taken. It was like a really fun series exploring like Dick as like this definitely more lighthearted Batman with a much more violent, dark Robin. I was like, Dick Grayson, that's what it is. Yeah, Tracy, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But like the series was so cool because I'm like, oh, so it, they reverse it. Now the brooding dark one is Robin.
Right.
And like the lighthearted one trying to be your hero is Batman. But then of course they like undid that status quo just like maybe a year later, and Batman's back, and then Nightwing kind of goes back to irrelevancy. And like that, I feel like that's the same story with a lot of their characters with DC. That's like my biggest criticism with DC right now, is that they don't allow natural growth of their characters.
Mm-hmm. They don't really allow the storylines to actually breathe a little bit.
Flash sold for 20 years of Wally West as the main Flash, and it has its most successful runs, both critically and financially. Like the Wade run of Flash is super popular. And it's all about Wally. That one run for like hundreds of issues.
Right.
And no one cares because it's just Flash. Same costume, maybe modified a little bit.
Right.
same superpowers. It doesn't matter. And so in the same vein, like I feel like if you retired the Bruce Wayne character and for the next 5 years only had like Dick Grayson be Batman, no one would care.
Eventually Dick Grayson is Batman. Yeah, like that's how that works.
I like, you know, there's arguments to be made that like it's more in character for him to be his own thing and become Nightwing, or it's more in character for like one of the other Robins, like Damian or Tim, to become Batman eventually. Like, and that's fine, whatever. My point is, they're not, DC's never going to allow any of those things to happen,
right?
Because we saw that already. So like, I'm gonna take. So I actually listened to a podcast by Kevin Smith, who's a big into
Kevin Smith. Who, yeah, he's a huge comic book, but actually a filmmaker for the most part.
Filmmaker too. So, and he's done a lot more sci-fi, fantasy,
type just project. Like random shit. Like he's done, he did Mallrats, and he did, what else did he do? It was Jay and Silent Bob. Those are the two things that I really know him for.
But. Oh yeah. And he does his own podcast called Fat Man, which is really great. And he just interviews various people in the industry, both entertainment, comics, everything kind of. And I went to a wedding a couple weeks back, and I listened to an interview with what's his name? I'm gonna look it up right now because he's really good. But as I'm looking it up, I'll explain it. The podcast was just with this legendary writer. It was three podcasts all put together.
Okay.
And it like was
sort of them all.
Like at different points. And then like after this writer had passed away, they decided to kind of do a giant one together, in which it was like a 3-hour segment of like all his podcasts together.
Okay. So
it was with Denny O'Neill, and Denny O'Neill was a Batman writer. And then I think he was a Batman editor, my apologies. And then he worked on various different projects, and it was basically his story from when he was called in kind of at the beginning of the Silver Age. So when they started reinventing DC. Yeah. So when they brought him back, they decided they were going to start, they wanted to revamp Green Lantern. They wanted to revamp Batman. They wanted to revamp The Flash. And like, these characters were significantly different than they were in the Golden Age. So like, you know, when we think of like the original Flash, it's the guy with like the tin head, Jay Garrick. He had like the lightning on his hat.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they're like, okay, we want to take this guy, this superhero again, who's inherently just a guy that runs fast, but like his gimmicky 1940s attire and look and personality just won't translate. So that's how they came up with Barry Allen.
Right.
They took Green Lantern, who was originally like a magic-based superhero, had the magically powered lantern that gave him powers that he could use through his ring. And since magic had kind of like fallen off, they reinvented him as like a sci-fi guy. And
I feel like they did that one a disservice. Just have to throw that out there.
I agree, but you also remember, like, at this point, Star Trek was getting big.
Okay, yeah, no, that's fair. That makes sense. Yeah,
so, and then, like, I think Star Trek, it was probably around that time, but, like, other, like, sci-fi type stuff was kind of in the woods. And then that's what they started publishing a lot more Western comics in the same vein, too, because that's just what was popular at the time. Magic really... I mean, like, you have magical characters like Constantine and Doctor Strange that kind of came and went in popularity. Mm-hmm. But I feel like magic as a whole really didn't come back until, like, Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter got
I think Harry Potter especially pushed it, because Was Lord of the Rings before? I mean, obviously it was written before, but...
Oh, Harry Potter might have started coming out in the 90s, I think, when the first ones came out. And then
I think it came out in, like, 99 or something.
Yeah, so I think it does slightly predate the Lord of the Rings films, but anyway, that kind of general resurgence wasn't until decades later.
Right.
So that's why they decide, hey, a magical character probably will not sell as well as a sci-fi character. And yeah, it was just, yeah, so kind of what my point of this was, like, there was a time where DC took their characters and made like these crazy changes with them, because like going from taking Green Lantern, which is a magic-based character, to a science sci-fi space character was a big shift.
Right.
And then you saw that they kept doing that. There was different Green Lanterns. You had started with Hal Jordan, and you went to John Stewart, and then Guy Gardner, then Kyle Rayner, and then Simon Baz, Jessica something. And now you pull up the Green Lantern book, it's just Hal Jordan again.
It's just Hal Jordan, and it's a picture of Ryan Reynolds. Like, that's what you get.
It's Hal Jordan. You look up what's the Flash right now, it's still Barry Allen. We've had Wally West come in. We've had Bart Allen come in, but we're still stuck on Wally West. And that just that saddens me a bit, because like, we have so many great characters in DC specifically, like the Atom, not a great character, I don't really care about the Atom that much, but like, which is Ray Palmer. But then they, like, in the 80s and 90s, they like introduced Ryan Choi, who was like his like TA or something in college when he was a professor, and then like he became the new Adam. And then when New 52 came on, Ryan Choi disappeared. And then there is the Firestorm was another one that they're tired of the original one, and then they had like an African American character take over. Right. I can't remember the name because I really don't care about Firestorm that much, but like that's another character that just disappeared. Mm-hmm. The second Aqualad was African American, and he was just only recently reintroduced. And Aqualad was also the
Aqualad?
Aqualad, yeah.
Like not Aquaman. Aqualad.
No, Aquaman's one of those characters that kind of remained the same since his inception, but his
that makes sense. But he has a son.
No. Aside, so the original Titans, it was Garth. He was just
this is mind blowing. Go ahead.
So Aqualad. Okay, the original Teen Titans was Robin, which was Dick Grayson.
Yeah.
Donna Troy, who was the original Wonder Girl.
Okay.
There's been two Wonder Girls, so Donna
right.
Troy. Speedy, which was, you know, Green Arrow's sidekick, Kid Flash, okay. And then Garth, who was Aqualad, who was a guy who controlled water and then fought with Aquaman.
Listen, the reason that's so fucking funny to me, because, like, you say Aqualad, and I'm like, that feels like a nickname they would have called Adam Sandler's character in Waterboy. That's what that feels like to me.
Did you no? Were you not part of the Young Justice craze when you were in high school?
Honestly, I didn't give a shit.
No, like, really. I started
watching Teen Titans Go, and I was like, "Why is everybody so on this?"
No,
and I was like, "Oh wait, this isn't what everybody wants to be watching right now." Like, I watched like 10 episodes of it, and then got to the lunch table to talk about it, and I was like, "Oh, this is not what you guys were talking about."
Either way, yes, Aqualad is a character. Oh, actually, that's kind of funny. I'm curious now if I should do a segment on this where I just tell you the name of a character and you have to guess if they're real or not.
Honestly, like, if you want to do that, do you have a quiz today for me?
I had a couple just where I was going to talk about, like, a couple of random questions and, like, okay. Also kind of do the same thing where I give you the name of a comic and you have to guess what it's about.
We're going to do that. But, that's funny to me because it's like you couldn't have come up with like they couldn't have made anything like they couldn't have pulled something from myths to be like Aquaman sidekick is and I got nothing like I'm not
oh, yeah.
my well's dry on that front, but I guess I understand if I had to name a character right now who's Aquaman sidekick it's
yeah and that's kind of that's the general criticism I think
H2O we'll have a, boy. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah. And that's the general criticism people have with the New 52, though, is because it kind of just erased all that development and then just kind of tried to start things over. And then DC Rebirth came on a couple years later, and they were saying, oh, actually, it was Dr. Manhattan. He messed up the world and brought everything back to normal, so it was darker like he wanted. And then here's Wally West back. And then that didn't really go anywhere. It ended terribly. Now DC's, I think DC's mostly in a weird state where like, I don't know. I think some of their books are okay, but it just feels weak.
Right.
And then Marvel's kind of the opposite where like they don't care about their older characters and they keep kind of developing new characters over and over again. Like how many, so growing up from Marvel, I had the New Mutants.
Okay.
Which I really liked, which are like the junior X-Men team, and then the Champions that I really liked, which were like the junior Avengers team. And then when I started talking with like some people in high school, Young Avengers got really popular.
Right.
Which is the really big thing. And then I'm sorry, I wasn't Champions, it was New Warriors that I was into as a kid. And then recently now it's like a new team of Champions that are just another version of Junior Avengers that are completely different characters. Like It's weird because I feel like Marvel keeps throwing things at a wall to see what sticks.
They're just like, let's try it. Nope. Okay, we're gonna
make Captain America and African American, which is okay, fine, sure. We're gonna make Thor Jane Foster now. That's whatever. And like
that was a choice. That was a really interesting choice. I don't know.
I don't mind it nearly that much. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it should have been Jane Foster. My big thing
that's
is
that's totally fair.
It should have been Sif. It should have been Valkyrie. It should have been there was a character they introduced. Like, so the weird part is in that run they introduced a character called Rosalind Solomon, who was like this like super environmental agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. that like dealt particularly with environmental eco-terrorism, which I thought was super cool.
Yeah.
And then like when they were announced the female foe, they said her first arc was going to be to deal with companies that were like exploiting the Earth and like other realms for their resources. I'm like, oh, clearly it's going to be Rose Solomon. She's going to be the new Thor. But then they just made Jane Foster out of nowhere. And I was like, oh, all right.
Do you think that was heavily influenced by then turning it towards the movieverse?
I don't know. At the time, I don't think Natalie Portman was super well received in those movies.
Right. I wonder if they had any sort of like foresight though. Like, well, maybe we can make it. Oh, because I was very confused because we're recording right now and Zoom popped up and was like, do you want more time? Did you get that notification?
I did. I got that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, what? There's only two of us, but you.
Oh, then, shoot.
Because that's... there are two of you because you're all using right. audio for one, but oh, we're God. Fine. It'll keep going. So anyway.
Yeah. And then I don't know, but either way that was kind of. I don't mind it too much because like I wasn't like a super big Thor fan, so I didn't really care too much. In the same way, I don't really care about any of the Avengers, so I don't really care necessarily about that. The character I did care about was Nova. That was my dude. It was great. If you ever get a chance, you should read Annihilation in the Nova series by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. Okay. Great sci-fi series. They killed Richard off in the Richard Rider, who was Nova in the best way ever. His death was awesome. And then like a year and a half later, they're like, we want a new Nova. And this is the new kid Nova. I'm like, but who the crap is this kid? And now with everyone doing movies, they're like, we're going to make Sam Alexander the Nova because he's Hispanic and we want more diversity. And I'm like, but this kid just showed up. Like he's been here less than 5 years. No, give it to the real one who did all the storylines, and now I'm really mad.
That sounded so like MAGA of you. If you take it,
I know, which is the worst. Which is the worst part? It's like, I'm sorry. Like, it's so bad. Like, I don't. But it's like, it's not even that Sam. They made him a Hispanic character. It's that they made him a Hispanic character and then have given him nothing interesting to do for 6 years. So I blame Marvel for this. This one's on Marvel.
Like, this one's on Marvel.
Like, look at Miss Marvel, the Kamala Khan. She's getting a TV show. She's a great character. You know exactly what she stands for. She's got this cool, unique power set. Has really good stories, really good runs. Awesome, popular character. Kate Bishop, the new Hawkeye. Awesome character. She is gonna be in the new Hawkeye show with Clint Barton. Played by Jeremy Renner, obviously.
Right.
And it's like, I love that run that they're basing it off of, and Kate Bishop's a super cool character. So, like, I definitely think that Marvel does some of the stuff well, but I think Sam Alexander is one of those characters they threw at a wall and it didn't work out. Compared to, like, Miles Morales, who is another legacy character, also Hispanic and African American.
Right.
Spider-Verse is the best Spider-Man movie to ever come out.
I still haven't seen it. I know that I should watch it. Like, I'm very aware that I should watch it.
Super real. Super awesome. He deals with racial issues. Mm-hmm. His like, racial identity is part of his character, but also being Spider-Man is at the forefront of his character.
Right.
Which is super cool. It feels like Sam isn't either of those things, and that's why I don't like the Sam Alexander character. And so that's why, like, I think it's funny how Marvel and DC are kind of flopped, where, like, DC doesn't, I feel like, push their diverse characters very well. And I don't think Marvel pushes their diverse characters very well either sometimes, but for the most part they do it better.
Did you ever read Superman Red Son?
I was hoping we talked about this tonight because this is one of the comics we talked about when we were in high school.
Yes, this was my favorite at that point and still sticks with me.
Is this what got you into comics? Or
this is what got me into comics and got me a detention in high school.
All right, tell me all about it.
Okay, so Superman Red Son, the concept, if for anybody who doesn't know, is that Superman lands, instead of landing in America, he lands at a different time and like of day. So the Earth's tilted a different way. So he ends up landing in Soviet Russia. So he becomes like a Soviet Russian, basically like government entity, Superman sort of thing. And the rebels that are fighting against him are called the Batmen. and so it's like this really cool, like, AU of Superman Batman fights this whole time.
Oh yeah, because I think like the idea is Batman's parents are part of the aristocracy who were thrown in Soviet camps,
right?
And so that's why Batman is literally like fighting for the noble class is like his character.
Yeah, and it's like
just so great.
But it's so cool because it's like the take on Superman that, because Superman is the all American, like this like all American ideal that people reference, even though he's a fucking alien. Like, it's
no, we're not. Do you want to fight about Superman? Because I'll fight you about Superman.
Okay, Superman is an alien. He is not American. Like, he's from a different planet.
Yes, but the reason he's Superman is because he embodies the greatest qualities of the American, or I guess of humankind is a better way of saying it.
But he's not a human.
That's what makes him super, though.
See, but that's the thing, is it's like, for reading this comic, it's like, well, he embodies all the qualities of the Soviet Russia.
No, that's the interesting part of it. I mean, yeah. Like, they made it like, what if like he grew up with different values?
Right, and loved that, it
because he's still essentially like, he's still Superman. Like, he's still like, I mean, like, obviously it takes jabs at communism,
right,
and other and the ideology, and he's not as lawful good as he would be, but
right. But it also it. I guess I'm just the kind of person that reading that, I was like, this is so awesome because in my head I was like, because Superman's not American. Like, he grew up with the American ideology in the lore of his upbringing and like the way that they wrote the stories. Yeah, I get that. But it's like, how much, it's that odd thing where it's like nature versus nurture, because I'm pretty sure at the end of it, and spoiler alert, maybe if I remember it correctly, I'm pretty sure at the end of it, he ends up like flying himself into the sun.
Yeah, he fakes his death and lets Lex Luthor take over the world, essentially.
Right.
Lex Luthor is kind of a good guy in this. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's one of those things where it's like, this is so intriguing that we've built up this narrative around Superman as American, and like Superman is an American entity, where it's like, we really have no claim other than he's a character. Like, and this is a whole debate because he's a fictional character, but like, we have no claim. Superman. I personally think Superman as non-American works better than Superman as American.
To a degree. As long as Superman is inherently has human qualities, I'm fine with it. If you take away the human qualities from Superman, you've lost me on that one.
That's because
fair. The point of that ending was that Superman realized that he can't be the dictator. He can't be the one in charge because he isn't human. He doesn't understand human struggles, and he can overpower humanity at any point he wishes to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's super important. If you're interested in Superman, where he is still the golden boy, but like written really well, you need to read Kingdom Come for certainty.
Okay.
Which is the idea of a world without like the golden age of superheroes, and like these more darker superheroes taking charge instead. And then the return of Superman, essentially, in his old age.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one, Superman. It was like a super classic run where, like, the entire time he never has any problems with like the villains, but he just realizes he's dying, and like the same stuff that's been giving him his powers is slowly killing him. And so it's an entire run. It's just a very human run with all these like ethical, moral dilemmas of like his passing. What's that gonna mean for everybody?
The villain and, like, story is death.
No, exactly. And like, he can't escape it. It's not something he can beat.
Right.
And I think that's how you write Superman well, is if you consistently give him human struggles. Because at the end of the day, Batman versus Superman, Superman's going to win because you could chuck him in the sun in half a second. So, like, and that's why I think Red Sun was interesting, because it had gave him a sense of ideology that we don't normally equate with the Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it was a fascinating run. And, like, yeah. They made a movie about that recently, too, I believe.
Obviously, I haven't seen that. I've been keeping up well enough. Like,
I don't know.
I haven't seen The Killing Joke. Like, I'm still.
Oh, you don't need to watch it. Killing Joke was terrible, but
was it really?
That's art was bad. It was just wasn't very good. Also, I'm sick of Joker.
So, like, that's fair. You watch the Joker and you're like, no, okay, let's move on. And after Heath Ledger, it's one of those things where it's like, why didn't we stop? We maybe could have put that on hold. Maybe could have.
Exactly. And like,
for actors for a little bit, just a little bit.
There are better Batman villains.
Right. That's very true. When I think of comics, I mean, we like obviously think mostly of superhero comics, but even as we're talking about the way that they like reboot the different franchises and series and all that, honestly, I feel like one of the best examples of how I think comics should handle things is actually Doctor Who as both a series and a comic series.
Yeah, Doctor Who, they've had, they've done a lot. They've done audiobooks, they've done comics, they've done books. I recently read, I think, it was like a Doctor Who collaboration between like 10, 11, 12.
Yeah.
Which was a fun read. Like,
right.
It was like, it was taking them like what would happen if on their darkest day they made the dark choice instead.
Right.
Which was a fun one. And then it ends with like them seeing Nine and realizing Nine could never make the darkest choice because he was inherently fantastic. Like, oh, that was super cool. And like, I like, yeah. So like, I think comics can be expanded definitely from the superhero thing. So have you had any experience like besides Doctor Who, I guess, in the comic world that's not superhero related?
I read, this is so much in my vein, like it's completely, like, I feel like you're not gonna be shocked by this, but one of my favorite comics and one of the comics that I still have, because I have like three or four comics, three of them are superhero based, and they're by my good friend Victor Dandridge Jr., who is an excellent like indie comic book writer, and he runs Vantage In-House Productions, and is arguably responsible for the first three episodes of Luke Cage, but we'll talk about that later. But then there is this comic written by somebody who worked with or is associated with Saturday Night Live back in its heyday. And it's just like this whole up through like Tina Fey, this whole like comic book retrospective about the behind the scenes work of Saturday Night Live. And for me, that was just really cool to like see. And
yeah,
and I purchased that and read that.
So it's literally just behind the scenes, but with comic. That's such an interesting format to do for that.
Yeah, especially because that's not something you make up. Like that's like, because most graphic novels are things that are fictionalized. And so the idea to see just a graphic like depiction of real people doing real shit was interesting, because it's, I mean, that's the thing that I think people would find least intriguing about comics, is if it's just real, like real people. But that, and then I have an awareness of, but haven't fully read, Fun Home, which was adapted into a musical, and it's written by this woman, and her first name's Allison. I can't remember her last name, but she like details her being raised in with a father who was secretly gay in a funeral home setting. Like her family ran a funeral home, and she's grown up to be a graphic novelist and artist and lesbian. And so it's this whole thing.
She grew up to be a lesbian. Okay.
I mean, and she is a lesbian. That's part of her identity, I guess, is how I should say that. But like, yeah, she grew up to be a lesbian. It was a choice. No, that's not a choice. But, so it's this really intriguing like account for her, kind of seems like therapeutic more than anything, to just, and I get that being somebody who writes, I get that, especially writing plays. I completely understand putting that into like this world of sharing where it's safe, but also entertaining. And
I'll be honest, I don't think a comic like that would probably do it for me.
I exactly knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, it's super. I'd rather just watch like a behind the scenes like video or documentary. Right. But I mean, it's interesting. It's definitely interesting. I could probably tie into our quiz a little bit, because part of what I did is I kind of grabbed some comic books that I've read over the years.
Okay.
That are, that are not. So I'm going to actually give you the title of various comics, and I want you to kind of take a guess a little bit of what they're going to be.
Okay. We should really have like a sting where it's like, it's quiz time or something like that.
Or sting time. oh goodness. No. So the parameters of the quizzes, they're not going to be like any, like, if they are Marvel or DC, they'll be super, super niche.
Okay.
So stuff that like you wouldn't even consider, like if you looked at it, you wouldn't think it was Marvel or DC.
Right.
And they're mostly not going to be superhero related.
Okay.
But they could be, only if they're kind of genre pushing.
Oh God. Okay.
So the first one is a recent one. So I think it started in 2016 or 2017. It's only about 12, 13 issues right now. Okay. Because it's just recently, like, as like the issue was, the artist was going to make the second series, they actually decided to turn it into a graphic novel instead of a weekly issue.
Okay.
So the title, so similar a couple weeks back, I think our first episode actually, Sora gave me the title of these musicals. And
that was the first episode.
I was supposed to figure out what they were from the title. And so based on that information, I'm also going to give you the title. And the title is Fence.
It's the title is Fence.
Fence.
Okay. And I have to tell you what the story is, just in, like, the overarching story?
Give me a summary or an idea.
Okay. I think that you have... I'm going to go Parent Trap on this one, okay? So it's like you have a very well-to-do individual who is at this specialty fencing school and is like trying to make it to the Olympics in fencing. And it's somebody who's come up basically just on scholarships and by luck has made it to this well-to-do school. Let's say they're meeting the diversity quota, because you said it started in 2016. So that's the thing that like people weren't like super pointing out, but were subtly pointing out in art. So this person who's not supposed to make anything is the biggest rival to this well-to-do person. And they're actually going to make it to the Olympics as like the country's premier fencing team duo. That's
really close, actually.
Is it so, actually?
So I mean, like, you got some of like the nitpicks. So the main character, he gets to go to his school that has a pretty prestigious fencing team on a scholarship. Not the best, just kind of just has like an inherent raw talent the coaches see.
Okay.
And on this team is the, I think, number two ranked in the country.
Okay.
That he considers his rival because they met at like some local tourney and he couldn't land a single blow on him. Mm-hmm. And so the dynamic here is that he's trying to fight for a spot. This number two guy is basically guaranteed a spot because he's the best person in the school.
Right.
And so he kind of creates this rivalry with Saiji, who's the main guy. I think the main character's name is Nathan. It's been a while since I read it, so I don't remember the name exactly. But he develops this rivalry with him. But the interesting part is that the rival does not give a single crap about the main character because the rival was completely outclassed by the number one in the world. And so the number one is so he's so focused on the number one. And then at the end of like the first 12 issues, he becomes focused on the main character because the main character pulls a move off exactly like the number one did.
So now
the main character's like, the rival's like, why are you copying? Why do you fence like Jesse? Like,
right.
And like,
are you Jesse?
No, it's that. So it was like this whole like he's like now like suddenly paranoid. This whole thing was just like a setup for him to get bested by some random kid that just Jesse trained like once, which is like super cool. Like it's a super cool like kind of like subversion of like the rival dynamic.
Right. Can I just throw this out there that whole description that I gave you was based on like 2 minutes of Lindsay Lohan's remake of The Parent Trap?
Fencing. Like, I mean, to be fair, I mean, like, fence makes it pretty obvious what the sport is, and it's pretty, like, right. It obviously falls into some tropes. Yeah. The big thing is, the only female character in the story is the coach, and you would think that's bad, except all the guys are gay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, like, and it's so casually done, too, so it's never talked about, it's not, like, a huge part of their characters, except that the player, he just seduces other guys, like, the player character... The like the budding cute romances that you see like kind of in typical like rom-coms or like I guess fantasy series or like animes, like it's just dudes with dudes, which I didn't catch that at first. I'm like, huh, there's not a single female character and they're all flirting with each other.
I see what's going on here.
But like I think it is probably the most seamless, flawless inclusion I've seen probably with sexuality, which I thought was really neat there. All right.
Okay, great.
The next one, I'm hoping you've heard of it.
Okay.
You probably have heard of things based off of it more than definitely, because this, I would say this comic has shaped some not recent TV shows, but definitely some a genre of TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
The title is Fables.
Oh, Lord. See, this feels like something I should know more of. So am I giving you just a general summary of what it yep. is?
It also had Telltale's video game made about it a couple years back as well.
Okay. Fables is... I should know this. But I'm going to go with it is based off of those, like, Aesop's fables where it was, like, really important lessons that people needed to learn. And so you have to, like, you explore. There's a certain character that you follow who learns all of these different lessons or tells all these stories. That this one I'm really drawing a blank on because there's nothing in Parent Trap about fables. that's my starting reference point.
Would you like a single hint for half points?
Yes, give me a single hint.
Once upon a time, the TV show by ABC was originally going to be Fables until they had some drastic changes with the source material. And so they decided to just make it instead and dropped the rights for the original Fables and just made their own thing instead.
Okay, so I'm going to say that this is probably then like the Brothers Grimm sort of thing, where it's like all of the original dark stories where we get all those like princess stories and stuff. It's the actual dark stories. Because you said it inspired some TV shows and there was that TV show Grimm. That was...
Yep.
So that's what I'm going with. Is like Brothers Grimm stories, like in the universe of comics.
Yeah, that's pretty close. I mean, Fables is a comic book that started in 2002, and the main characters are Snow White, the Big Bad Wolf, Little Boy Blue, characters like that.
Okay,
they're just based off, you know, fairy tales and songs that you hear as a kid.
Right.
And the gimmick for this though is that they all live in a district of New York called Fabletown, where where all these Western European fables escaped from their world to New York, running from a character
they
known
immigrated.
As I mean that's a big part of it. They immigrate essentially, running from a villain called the Adversary. There's gonna be some light spoilers here, so if anyone cares about that, now's a good time to tune out.
Skip forward.
No, the interesting thing we're trying is the Big Bad Wolf is the good guy here. Like he's kind of like the grim Wolverine type figure that protects the town.
Okay.
And then like various Disney characters, not Disney, sorry, fantasy character, fable characters come and go. Their power levels are basically based on how popular they are. So So Little Red Riding Hood is a villain. It's like character in this, kind of a bounty hunter type figure. And no matter how many times they kill her, she comes back because she's just so popular. Versus Little Boy Blue, who is one of the main characters, who's based on one song. After he dies, he's done because he's just not popular enough to come back, which is just an interesting dynamic altogether. The real twist comes, though, when you find out that the adversary, the emperor that overthrew their original fable land, is actually Geppetto from Pinocchio.
The puppeteer.
Who is in the most clever display of villainy ever. He's a puppeteer that created his son, and the fairy brought his son to life. Really nice. And then their local lord was just causing too much trouble for the peasants, so he decided, what if I just recreate the local lord that's local to me? And so now the local lord was friends with them, and then a rival lord tried to take over their lands, and so he's like, I guess I'll just create another puppet that will take over the rival land and be loyal to me, and so we'll be peaceful. And then one thing led to another, and he's conquering multiple worlds.
Holy shit.
And it was like, and like that reveal is so crazy. Like, oh wow, it's Geppetto is the bad guy. What the heck? Prince Charming's a scumbag. That like it's this. So Prince Charming is the same Prince Charming for every princess story.
Oh my god. He's just chasing the same princess and cheating.
No. So it's all different princesses. It's the same prince for all of them, which is. And like, heavily recommend. Heavily recommend. Recommend it. Cinderella is like this badass spy that does like dark missions and like kills like normal humans to like protect Fabletown. It's a good series. I would heavily recommend it. And it did like it honestly inspired Grimm. It inspired Once Upon a Time. I'd probably say probably even inspired Supernatural to a degree. Another
that's fair.
Movies like that. I think it was very very important. Next one is going to be I think a lot harder.
Okay.
Planetary.
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 Okay.
And you can ask any question and I'll give you as best answer as a hint if you'd like. But the The name is Planetary. I'll give you some summary details about it.
Wait, hold on. So the first thing I think of when I hear planetary is like planetarium. And so I think that this has to be, just answer me this yes or no. Is it interactions between other planets? Like,
okay, so it does have some sci-fi elements. It is not inherently sci-fi though. It is not about, it's not like planets meeting planets. It's mostly confined to Earth, except for like one or two instances.
Okay, so I'm going to turn a sharp left here and actually say that it has to do with global warming.
Okay.
And the concept that, like, the Earth is starting to revolt against us, and that's what global warming is. And there are creatures that are coming, like fantasy creatures are coming to life to try and warn us. I'm just describing the Lorax is what I feel like now. But like, there are fantasy creatures coming to life trying to warn us, but also trying to fight us for the sake of the Earth, because otherwise if it gets too hot, the Earth will itself become a creature and just kill all of us. Planetary.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
All right, I will give you actually a half point for that answer.
Is it because of the Lorax?
It is slightly because of the Lorax. Okay. I'm actually giving you a point because it's your idea of that fantasy creatures are coming as like a natural response to crises, which is kind of the whole point of this. It's the premise is that every turn of the century, superhumans are created that exist to be the planet's planetary defense system.
Okay.
And so the main character is basically based off Jack Frost.
Got it.
And it's a dynamic that explores a relationship between like the pre-Golden Age heroes. So guys like Tarzan and the original Indiana Jones and Sherlock Holmes, the Zorro, all those. I don't know if Zorro actually is that. Lone Ranger.
Lone Ranger, okay.
And so it's dealing with that transition from that age of heroes to now the more modern Golden Age superheroes that we see. And so the bad guys are the Fantastic Four that are perverting the world for their own personal gains through science-based means. And one of the things that hooked me the most was a scene where it's like a meeting of characters based off like Kazar, the Tarzan type figure, the various adventure swashbuckling heroes of old, a Dracula vampire type figure. Either way, like it's like this meeting of like all like these like pre-superhero heroes, and they find like this portal to another world, and out comes like a alternate version of the Justice League, and they proceed to kill each other to defend their worlds. And like, I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then it's a little bit of a darker story that just like explores that dynamic a bit, and then it just shows that like, you know, the planet will naturally create heroes or century children to protect itself against things that would do it harm.
Okay.
Yeah, so fascinating read. I would heavily recommend it. It does a lot of subversions of the superhero genre. A big thing is like another issue that hooked me was when the Fantastic Four single-handedly eliminated the Justice League before they ever existed. So like the Superman type figure lands in Kansas, the Human Torch figure comes down to find him, and then he's like, oh, I think it's a superhuman baby, let's test it, burns it alive, oh, it doesn't have its powers yet. And then flies off. They kill Green Lantern before he arrives, they hunt down Wonder Woman, kill her before she even starts, stuff like that.
Oh man, that does sound really intriguing.
No, yeah, I mean, like, it's like they're good villains. It's a good story. The heroes are like, the other characters are all like descendants of like the more classic heroes that we know before superheroes. All right. This next one is one I actually don't know a whole lot about. I've never actually read this comic. I just think it's probably one of the most fascinating comics I've ever heard of. It's called Astro City.
Are you sure it's not called Astrocity?
Astrocity. good old Mega Man reference.
Yeah, exactly. I think that Astro City, clearly we've colonized Mars, and this is a comic about the first government that is formed on another planet by humans being overthrown by Martians and the indigenous people who actually live there.
That's a fair assumption.
If that's not what it's about, I want to read that.
And that I think that would be a great comic, actually.
Yeah.
This one, like, I don't know a lot about. It's another superhero comic.
Okay.
Kind of exploring various social issues. The big thing that I like it, that I definitely want to give it a read at some point, and the reason I'm saying some point, mm-hmm. is because it's a continuous story that's been written since 1996.
Oh, damn.
And as people have described it to me, we've only recently learned the backstory of one of the main characters introduced in 1996, 2 years ago.
How?
It's that, I don't, like, I think that's one of the most fascinating things I've ever heard when mm-hmm. I heard this comic book. It's like, how do you have, like, it's published by Image Comics, which is a more indie comic book
right.
compared to the big ones. But just, like, the patience you'd have to write a story set in one city with, like, really a kind of, I mean, it's their cast of characters. I mean, it's in, like, the 40s or 50s. It's mm-hmm. big enough. But, like, the dedication you have to that craft, like, and the continuity there, I think right. is incredible.
That's some fucking, like, Tolkien shit.
No, yeah, it literally is. I can't really think, I mean, the only fantasy series that comes close to it is probably The Wheel of Time, which was 14 books written over a few decades. Thank you. That was a powerful sneeze.
Powerful sneeze. Would that be, oh, that'd be a horrible superhero power.
All right.
This is the ability to sneeze.
My last powerfully. Question.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. My last question is not going to be a title-based question.
Okay.
IRL, in real life,
yes.
Who was what was the first superhero ever developed? And we'll say mainstream, so like relatively popular, because like obviously there's been some random ones created over the years. But
first mainstream superhero ever
developed. And I use the term mainstream very, very loosely. By mainstream, I mean he still appears in comics today.
Okay. And we're talking about hero.
Hero, superhero. Yes.
Not a villain.
Heroine, maybe.
Okay. Oh, goodness. Because all of me wants to get this right so badly. So I'm going to talk through some things. I feel like Captain America was a response to the World War, the second one.
I believe that is correct. You probably.
I don't think he was the first. Because I think we probably would have gotten into it like in the mid-30s was like when all this started picking up. I don't know. This is real outsider insight, and I'm just trying to buy my time until I decide.
You're correct. Captain America debuted in 1941, which is
right.
Which you are looking for a character that would have debuted, I believe, 3 to 4 years earlier.
That's what. Okay, so like, yeah, mid to late 30s. Let me think. It's not Batman. It's not Superman. It's not Spider-Man. I don't think it's Wolverine. I'm going to go with Mr. Fantastic.
Oh. It is an excellent guess, but unfortunately, you actually discredited one of your guesses.
Really?
It is, I think, to no one's surprise, the archetype of the superhero, the first one would have to be Superman, which is Clark Kent, who debuted in 1938. Now, there have been some other characters like Dr. Cold, Flash Gordon, mm-hmm. the Phantom Magician, characters that didn't really stick in popularity that came in years prior. Right. Well, the first mainstream hero was Superman, followed by Namor the Submariner. I don't know if you know who that is. He's like the Marvel version of Aquaman that still actually is in comics.
Okay.
And then a month later was Batman. And then you had a version of Wonder Man that was revamped, Blue Beetle, which was obviously revamped.
Mm-hmm.
Human Torch, not the same one from Fantastic Four.
Right.
But Fantastic, like, honestly, the Mr. Fantastic vote isn't terrible because the Fantastic Four brought back the comic book age in the 60s.
Right.
Like, you were on the right train of thought where, like, he technically started the second age of superhero comics.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, it was just the wrong age.
I thought Superman was too obvious simply because it's like, if I were to start with Superman, it'd be like, I have nowhere else to go from here.
Well, I think that's one of the coolest parts is the fact that he is the first one, because mm-hmm. when you think, what's a superhero you want in our world? It's Superman. Like
that's fair.
That's the one you want, the Boy Scout, the one that's always going to do the right thing, the one that's not going to kill. That's the character you want, the person you want. And so I think it's only fitting that he's the first one that all superheroes come from.
That's totally fair.
Yeah.
Totally fair.
But I believe we are trying to go for an hour now.
We are trying to just go for an hour so that way more people listen to what we have to say.
Which is fine. We are 3 minutes over an hour, so I feel like this is probably where we should call it for today.
Okay. Is there any other thing? Sorry, go ahead.
I would say, let's I don't want you to stop recording because, I kind of want to keep recording stuff. But, if you want to cut it off now, I'd say let's make – right on here at the cutoff point, we'll shout out I think if you want to hear a far superior podcast, please check out Fat Man by Kevin Smith because they're actually in a studio.
Not just over Zoom.
And they will interview people like Katie Sackhoff and other cool comic and entertainment artists. So I would say shout out to that. And that's a big inspiration why I want to talk about comic books today is just because I listened to that podcast and it's amazing.
Right.
Do you have anyone you'd like to shout out, Sawyer?
I have to, again, I said it earlier, but I have to shout out to Victor Dandridge just because, very genuine, great guy, great writer, really in the indie comic world, based out of Columbus, Ohio. Good friend. Check out his work. I did a podcast with him for my normal Pause for Effect, or my regular, whatever you want to call it, and he does for comics what I feel Jesus Christ Superstar did for the Bible, where it's really, really humanizing heroes.
Is he the same Victor that went to our high school, or is this a different Victor?
This is a totally different Victor.
Okay, my bad. That's the only Victor that I knew that you knew, so I was curious.
No, you're totally fine. I met him while I was in high school, but he was at least 10 years my senior.
He went to one of your Sans Me productions, right?
Yes, the very first one.
Maybe that's where I know him from.
That would probably be where you know him from. But yeah, so that's who I want to shout out. And we'll call this the end of comics part one.
I'm sure we will revisit it because this is something I'm super passionate about, but we should go back to our outsider inside roots.
Yes, yes, we should. But so then we'll cut this recording off here. So Caleb, you want to take us out on that recording?
Yeah, I'm out.